Hi, I'm Leah Lane, an award-winning travel writer and author of Places I Remember, Tales, Truths, Delights from 100 Countries. On this podcast, we share conversations with travelers about fascinating destinations and memorable experiences around the world. I haven't been everywhere, but it's on my list. That's a famous quote from author Susan Sontag, which I've used for myself. Our guest, Harry Mitsaitis, has been everywhere. He's founder of Nomad Mania, an online hub of over 20,000 independent travelers offering powerful tracking and planning tools for travel adventures. Harry is one of a very exclusive group of maybe 100 people in the world who visited all of the 193 sovereign countries, according to the United Nations. And he's visited many of them twice or more. He's known by many as the world's most traveled man. Welcome, Harry, to Places I Remember.
Hello, Leah, and thanks very much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I have so many questions as a fellow frequent traveler who's been to a mere 100 countries or so, about half of where you've been. I have so many questions. So let's start. First, where did you grow up? And when you were growing up, did you travel much?
So I was born in London, but I grew up in Greece, in Athens. And yes, we did used to travel quite a lot as a family because my mum's English, South African English. So we would go to England, we went to South Africa, we also have relatives in the States. I was a reasonably well-traveled child and young man, especially back then in the early 80s when people didn't travel all that much.
So when did you realize that you wanted to achieve this extreme travel goal?
Well, I think it was a gradual process. It's not something that you just decide on from one day to another. I think I just was curious about the world. I was intrigued by some countries that no one would really want to go to. I was lucky enough to go to Vietnam when I was 24 in 1996 for a summer project. And Vietnam back then was just opening up to the world. And that trip really changed my perspective on travel, on the world, you know, and then I wanted more and more. So I guess toward my early 20s, I thought, you know, the idea of having a normal, quote unquote, life, a 9-to-5 or anything like that was really not me. And then eventually the travel bug just took over.
It sure did. How did you manage to accomplish it? How were you able to work or to afford traveling the world?
I was teaching, so I studied business and sociology, and then I got into lecturing in leadership and management. And the good thing with teaching is you get good holidays, lots of time off. So I would use every opportunity I had back then to go somewhere. And gradually, I had about 100, 120 countries without even trying that much. And then I was like, well, now I really have to do them all. I think it was a combination of making sure that the finances were well allocated, combining countries well so that I could do a number of them on one trip, and of course, sacrificing other things that, quote unquote, normal people may see as obvious. So, you know, I was never really into technical gadgets and things like that. I still have the same car after 20 years, you know, so things like that, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of family, were you able to do solo travel or how did that work?
I'm a solo traveler by nature. I'm an only child. And I think when you are an only child, you learn to be independent and you learn to like to do things on your own. So often I choose to travel alone, even though I am married and even though I could travel with loads of friends as well. But I do think that for me, the experience of traveling alone is the one where I truly explore and discover the culture of a place, where I get to have these unique meetings with locals. Once you're with someone from back home, I think that experience is diluted quite a lot.
I agree with you. I wrote a book called Solo Traveler. So many times when you're traveling with someone, you know, you're not looking around, you're talking about the stock market or something, and you don't realize that you lose it. Yeah. Now, do you stay a while in most of these countries or do you try to stay longer than just to put your foot down and run out? Because I know people who do that.
Oh, I know many people who do that. To be very honest, in a previous incarnation, back when I was ticking off the countries and trying to do them all. I think I'm guilty of having done that on a number of occasions.
Well, where have you done that?
Well, now I don't. But back then, let's say, in many of the African countries back in the day, I would only visit the capital and then say, okay, I've done it. I'm on to the next one. But, you know, once I finished every country, I think that is when I realized that you need to explore countries much deeper, you know, and understand the regional differences. I don't think the first time round I had really understood how varied African countries are or what the differences are. And this is something that I gradually came to realize by going there more. So nowadays, I do travel much slower. I've now been in Japan for 10 days, and I'm going to be here for another month, I think. So it's like a six-week Japan trip, which is something that 20 years ago, I would probably never think of. But now it's wonderful.
Well, you've done the 193.
Well, it's 193 according to the United Nations. Yes.
Yeah. So you don't have to rush. You can enjoy them from now on. Yeah. When you go there, do you eat local foods? Do you live in local places? What's your way of living?
I think I'm sort of a mixture between the adventurous and the cautious. So I'm not going to do things which could be dangerous. I'm not going to try street food in places where that could cause a lot of problems, for example. But yes, I am going to go local. I've been eating exclusively Japanese food for the past 10 days.
So do I.
Yeah. Well, in Japan, that's really easy because the food is so amazing and so varied. But I mean, even in countries which may not be famous for that, I do try to go local. The one where I really give up is India. I cannot handle spicy food. And in India, I just focus on the dessert because they're great and milky. And, you know, they have all these sort of creamy, milky things. But I cannot take the spices of the food. So usually I go hungry there. And in terms of accommodation, again, it varies a lot. I think one of the things about travel is not to have a rule, you know, to kind of do what you feel like. So sometimes I may stay at a five-star hotel. Sometimes I'm going to go to a hostel. Sometimes I'm going to go to an Airbnb. And obviously, quite a number of times, I may stay with friends or acquaintances. So
Others who have traveled the world, you have a group of you that connects all the time and talks about some of the wonderful things of the world. Is that correct?
Again, when I did it the first time round back then, I was very much alone. And of course, the internet was also not that developed. Back then, yeah, it was a very solo thing. But nowadays, yeah, we are a community. And obviously, I have founded a community called Nomad Mania, and there is a core of people, and we kind of always communicate. We tend to meet in the most obscure places sometimes, and even bump into each other, which is crazy. Well, I bumped into someone on the plane to Tuvalu, which is one of the least visited and least known countries in the Pacific. And there we were boarding, and I'm like, Gustav, you're here as well. And we ended up spending our time on Tuvalu together, which was great. But yeah, that's the good thing of being part of these extreme travel communities.
What would you say you extreme travelers have in common?
I think it's the curiosity to see and experience more. It's probably some form of restlessness, the inability to stay put for very long. And that's probably where it ends, because in terms of demographics, we're extremely different. You know, you get all shapes and sizes, ages. And I like that. It's a very democratic thing in a way. The one thing which I wish is that there were more people from lesser known countries. You know, many of us tend to be from the more obvious European, North America and Australia, you know, that background. But gradually, we're getting more Asians in the community and a few Africans as well. So that's really nice to see a global community of people who are really committed to traveling and experiencing and understanding the differences between countries that others have never heard of.
Right. Is it men and women both? Equal, not so equal?
Not so equal, sadly. There are many women, but it is more men, I think, in this people sometimes think that what we do isn't very qualitative, that it's more, you know, quantitative. I disagree with that, but I think that is a bit of the impression. And I think women may be more prone to travel for a longer time to a specific destination rather than hopping about that much. So in what we do, yes, there are more men, but we are trying to change that.
Have you taken many cruises? Is this a way you've seen many of the places?
Not as many as you would think or as I would like. And I don't think I've taken many cruises in the sort of classical sense. Right. I've taken a few expeditions. You can call them cruises, but they're more like expeditions, meaning that they're difficult trips. I mean, the boat is comfortable enough. You get some service, but it's not this sort of opulent place where you go to have fun. So if you're going, for example, to the Arctic, you know, to the islands above Russia, or you're going to Antarctica, those are demanding trips, where, you know, you need to be both physically strong and often the voyage itself is quite tough. I've taken only a couple of fun cruises, you know, like the classic Caribbean thing. I did that one.
I can't see you on that.
Well, you know, you've got to try everything once.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Let's talk about a few of your favorite countries and why. Give us a few.
It's difficult to choose one. If you ask me which country should you visit, I always say North Korea, not because it's my favorite, but because it's definitely the most bizarre, outlandish, totally different experience where you often feel everything is staged around you, a little bit like that movie with Jim Carrey. You never know what's real and what isn't. So in terms of my real favorite, I'll admit that I'm attracted often to the offbeat countries, not the most obvious. So it's not going to be, you know, Spain, although I really do like Spain, but, you know, it's not going to be the one I'm going to mention. Some of the African countries are surprising. Rwanda.
Oh, I just was there. I was just at
really?
The Mountain Gorillas. Yes. Did you go up to?
Isn't it delightful?
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Rwanda, I also think, is a very optimistic example of a country that had a terrible tragedy happen to it and somehow has managed to bounce back. And I think that positive message is also a very nice thing to see. I also love Namibia.
Yes, beautiful.
Incredibly diverse, really great. And I would say even in West Africa, which is much more challenging for the traveler, you have places like Benin, not very well known, but a lot of history, culture. You've got what is called the Venice of Africa. It's a sort of small village, which is made on stilts, and you can go in kind of gondolas around it. And then you've got a lot of slave sites, which give you a bit of the history of the place. These kind of countries where the culture is authentic definitely mean more to me. I'm in Japan now. I mean, it's impossible not to mention Japan as a favorite. It's so different. The people are so courteous, and yet it's exotic at every step, but at the same time, it's a very easy country to travel in. You never need to watch your back. You know that it's safe. You could leave money lying somewhere and you're going to find it after a day. You know, no one will touch it. So these things make Japan very nice. And I also like Iran a lot. You know, for Americans, synonymous with the devil, I suppose.
People are so friendly. I've been told that so many times.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. It's a real example where you need to separate the people from the politics, because the people in Iran are truly unbelievably hospitable. They will never let you go hungry. They'll invite you to their homes. And then, of course, the history, the culture. I remember being in Persepolis and being half Greek myself, you know, and in Persepolis, you can still see the burn marks on what is left of that ancient town. You know, I could really feel and sense the history, and Alexander the Great was, you know, burned it down. So I don't know. I think Iran really, really makes for a great trip if you can forget the political angle.
Right. Yeah. How about some of the least favorite countries? Is there anywhere where you really just did not care for the country for whatever reason?
I have never had a really bad experience. I mean, there's some countries where I feel that you are more likely to be ripped off because it's just the culture. The countries are poorer, and then people go there. The countries may be popular, places like Morocco or Tunisia, but I don't think it's, I wouldn't say I don't like them. I just think I am less attracted to them because of the idea that they are more popular. And when you go there, the locals see you a little bit like a bank. But at the same time, I understand them. They live in very difficult conditions without many job opportunities. So, you know, it's obvious that they're going to try to find their way through you. For me, everywhere is interesting. Even the bad is good in the sense that you can learn about yourself, how you deal with a difficult situation. And I think that's the point of travel, to learn about your limits, to learn about what you can handle and what you can't. So it's definitely educational. And there's no country where I really wouldn't go again. I often mention Gambia as an example of a country that sort of didn't really resonate with me. But again, maybe I need to give it another chance.
I'll wait on that one. How about beauty? What would you say struck you? Which parts of the world?
Well, that's a difficult question because beauty comes in many different forms. Right. I mean, you've got many beautiful towns or villages where you marvel at the architecture. And for example, I really like Central European small towns, places like Czech Republic, Hungary, that kind of architecture, that is beautiful. And because I grew up in Athens, which isn't really known for its beauty as a city, that is something that always attracts me. Then, of course, you've got natural beauty, and that again comes in many different shapes. You can have an amazing beach. I don't know if you've been to Mauritius.
But
have you been to Rodrigues Island?
No.
Well, that's an hour and a half flight away. It's still a part of the country. And Rodrigues Island has one of the most beautiful beaches I've ever seen. So that is stunning. You can just sit and look at it. I would say mountains. There are some mountains in northern Pakistan. And at the end of that, you have the K2, places like the Hunza Valley. Those are stunningly beautiful. You have these rugged mountains and then lakes within Tajikistan. I mean, all that mountain range sort of around the Himalayas, it's really beautiful to travel in. So those are some places which, to me, you know, I would gladly go there again.
Wonderful. How about customs? Are there any customs that you remember off the top of your head that struck you as the most strange or the most interesting, a festival perhaps that you were a part of?
Well, you know, the world is truly strange. You know, there's a never ending array of bizarre things one can witness everywhere. Let me think off the top of my head. Well, here in Japan, I've witnessed so many weird things in the last few days. Yesterday, I went for a meal of crab. I finished the meal and I thought that was that. I was ready to go, but then they said, no, sit. And then the woman came and in sort of broth that had remained from the crab, she took out everything that was in there and then added rice in and recooked it. And I was looking in amazement, you know, what's going on here? And because you can never really understand or talk with them, you just look in amazement and wonder what's next. And before I knew it, there was a sort of post-meal course of rice with a bit of seasoning. And I just couldn't think of what is the function of this course now. I'm already full. I've had all this crab, which was great. And now you're giving me rice, which is very tasty, but why? So, I mean, something as simple as that can be really, really bizarre. Of course, there's all sorts of other examples I could come up with.
Oh, of course. Yeah. We've done some episodes on interesting customs, and it's a fascinating what goes on in the world. And many people travel with that in mind. They go for a festival, and many people don't realize there's a festival and miss it. So I think it's something to consider when you're traveling the world, what the festivals are, not to miss them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, within our community, many people, you know, love the festivals. There's the ones in Papua New Guinea, which are very popular. Also, until this year, the Gerowol Festival in Niger, it had become popular. But now with the new political situation, situation there. I don't know what's going to happen. And then, of course, you've got in Latin America, you've got all these festivals, which are often you have masks and things like that.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
those are those. Yeah, it's great. I think that is one of the best things about travel, the festivals. Yeah.
And there are festivals actually in America or wherever you live, in your hometowns or nearby. If you check it out, I mentioned the Duct Tape Festival that I went to a few years ago. It was, everything was made of duct tape, the floats, the clothing. You know, it's interesting, right?
Well, what I love about America is that there's all these weird things, you know, especially if you go sort of off the beaten track into the States that some people would not necessarily travel to, you know, and you'll end up with like the world's biggest potato or something. And that's
absolutely,
like, that's really hilarious. I love
that. We're very good at that. Well, you've traveled to some dangerous destinations such as Somalia, Libya, Syria. You mentioned North Korea, Ukraine now, unfortunately, Afghanistan. What are some scary situations you've been in? Let's choose one. Is this something where you really were lucky to get out?
So I found myself in a jail cell in Yemen.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
That was not good. No. And luckily I wasn't alone. So at the time I was teaching in neighboring Oman. And I had this strange idea that going to Yemen was a good thing. And then a student of mine volunteered to take me. So luckily, at least I had an interpreter, and I got jailed with my student, who, poor thing, you know, he was in total shock. It wasn't fun. There were cockroaches, mosquitoes. We didn't really know what they wanted. In the end, what they wanted was the obvious. So the next morning, the obvious was settled in a relatively amicable way. And we ended up having a big meal to celebrate that in the sort of area of the prison. It makes for a good story, but at the time, it was really scary. I don't think I can express how scary it is to feel so vulnerable and not to know what may happen to you, you know. And at those moments, you just think of the people you love. It's funny how that is the natural instinct.
That's pretty strong, I would say. And I assume it was money that they wanted. Let's put that.
Well, yeah. Luckily.
You've been to, as I said, many obscure places. You've been to Sikkim and Nauru, and you've been to Pitcairn Island, where I've been too. We couldn't get on it. I was on a cruise and could not get on it because the waves were so high. So the whole island came on the ship. There were about 45 people that came on the ship, and it was kind of interesting. Yeah. I don't know what your experience was there, but it was different.
Well, I've been to Pitcairn twice, believe it or not.
Oh, my goodness.
So the first time it was out of French Polynesia on a sort of small yacht with another eight travelers, and we had 3 days on Pitcairn. And because there's no hotel there, they allocate you to a local and you pay them something, and for them it's a form of much needed income. So that was very interesting, because each one of us had a different experience depending on who we were allocated to. So I lucked out. I got a lady who had a very nice house and a lot of space with a marvelous view. And she also told me all the ins and outs.
Yes, we should mention about that. They're all related to Captain Bligh from Mutiny on the Bounty and other...
Oh, yeah. And she was actually a descendant of the Christian, whatever, from back then. Yeah. Pitcairn is well worth going to because it's the smallest inhabited territory anywhere. There's only 50 people living there. And the ship only comes, what, 3 or 4 times a year with
food? Yes, it's so exciting. When our ship came by, they were so excited to come on and have lunch. And we met the whole island. It was just, fascinating. And we bought t-shirts. They all had the merch, all the t-shirts. So it was different. Well, travel is a means to develop emotional and social intelligence. What do you think are the social responsibilities of travelers like yourself, the purpose besides racking up these experiences?
Oh, this is extremely important. And this is something that we also focus on a lot in Nomad Mania. So I totally believe, first of all, that as a traveler, you need to be an ambassador of your country, which means you must always be not only polite, but you must, in a way, represent your country. If you are demanding or mean or, you know, intolerant, then the people you're visiting are going to think badly of the place you come from. So, you know, you are representing. And that also means you need to know about your own country. So I always say, read up on where you're coming from, because people will ask you questions and you need to know the answers. I do think it's very important to travel with an open mind. I also support a lot the idea of trying, especially in difficult countries, to help local agents if possible. If you hear from other travelers that they're reliable, then use them directly, because these people really need these resources. So $100 may not be that much for you, but for them, it can make an incredible difference. I really think that it's very important to read up a bit about the customs and the way of life before you go to a place.
Absolutely. I just want to say, when you retire, if you ever do, I don't think you're going to retire to travel, but anyway, you'll never retire probably because you love this so much. But if you think you would settle in one place in the world besides your home, where would you settle in the world?
That is such a difficult question. I think for someone like me, the idea of settling would be very different than it would be to you or to anyone else. So when people think of retiring or settling, it's like, you find a place and you spend nearly your whole life there and build your life around that place. I can't really imagine myself doing that. But if I did have to choose, I really can't handle the cold weather for living in, not too much. And I like bright skies. So I think at the end of the day, anywhere around the Mediterranean may suit me well.
Doesn't sound bad. Well, the name of the podcast is Places I Remember. So out of all your many, many memories from so many places, can you please share one really special memory to close out this extraordinary episode?
Yes, I remember once I was driving in Sierra Leone. Well, I wasn't doing the driving, but I was in a car. I was going from Freetown to Monrovia, and it was a long overland journey.
This is in Africa.
This is in Africa, and the journey involved a couple of barges to cross rivers because they don't have bridges there. And I remember as we were waiting for one of the barges, there was a local village community, and of course, they don't get too many Caucasian people there. So they were all screaming, you know, and dancing and sort of playing around. And I decided, now I'm going to give these people $1. And I gave them the dollar, and I have never seen anything like it. You would have thought I gave them $1 million. They all burst out. And I mean, there were about 20 people. I don't know if they were one family or not. And imagine them colorfully dressed, the women in these sort of elaborate dresses. They didn't look poor. They looked, you know, very, very nice, clean. And they burst out in dancing and thank you. And they were, you know, really going for it. And then when the barge came, I could still hear them, you know, elated. And I think that the lesson from that, $1 can really make such a big difference to some people. It's very important to remember these small lessons. And that's a memory I have never forgotten.
Well, Harry Mitsidis, considered by many as the world's most traveled man. May you have many, many more travels throughout the world and maybe a few staycations as well. And thank you so much for traveling to us for just a little while.
Thank you so much, and happy travels to your remaining 90 countries.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to our award-winning podcast. We've recorded over 100 episodes of Places I Remember, so follow us on any podcast app. And new monthly episodes are also on YouTube with gorgeous video. My book, Places I Remember, is available in print and Kindle, and I read the audio version. Follow my travel writing at Forbes.com. Contact me at the links in the show notes or on my website, placesiremember.com, and keep making your own travel memories.